A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been building up a collection of industrial paint pens, the Eddings and such, and got especially taken by the silver and gold ones. They marred beautifully on black surfaces, surprisingly professional looking. But then he stumbled onto liquid chrome markers in a stationery store. These things lay down a finish that's basically indistinguishable from an actual mirror. Not shiny, not metallic, a mirror. So he's asking three things. What's the chemistry that makes liquid chrome do that, when regular silver markers can't? How durable is the finish in real-world use? And if you wanted to pair these with stencils for professional results on things like computer cases, what kind of stencil and technique are we talking about?
I love that this question lands right at the intersection of material science and DI, why craftsmanship, and the core thing to understand. The thing that separates liquid chrome from every silver paint marker you've ever used is that we're not talking about a difference in degree. It's not that liquid chrome is more silver, it's a fundamentally different physical mechanism. Think of it like the difference between a photograph and a painting. A silver marker is painting the idea of metal. Liquid chrome is creating the physical conditions for metal to exist as a surface.
What's actually going on inside these pens? Walk me through the chemistry.
The key is something called leafing aluminum pigment. Imagine ultra-thin platelets of aluminum. We're talking 50 to 100 nanometers thick. That's about 1/1000th the thickness of a human hair. To put that in perspective, if you took one of these platelets and scaled it up to the size of a sheet of paper, it would be proportionally thinner than the paper itself by a factor of about 100. These platelets are treated with a release coating, typically a fatty acid like stearic acid, and suspended in a fast evaporating solvent blend.
So we're basically in the territory of, if this were any thinner, it wouldn't exist.
And because they're that thin and that light, something remarkable happens as the ink dries. The platelets don't just sit wherever they land. The solvent begins evaporating, and as the liquid film contracts, these platelets float to the surface. That's the leafing part. And they align themselves parallel to the substrate. They form what is essentially a continuous metallic film, one platelet overlapping the next, all oriented in the same plane. It's self-assembly at the microscopic level, and it's happening in seconds.
It's like laying shingles on a roof versus just throwing a handful of gravel at it.
That's exactly the right image. The shingles overlap and create a continuous surface that light bounces off in a single direction. The gravel scatters light everywhere. And the difference is measurable. Molotow's liquid chrome hits around 95% reflectivity measured at a 60-degree gloss angle. A standard silver paint pen, something like the Edding 751, gets you around 60%. That 35-point gap is the difference between shiny and mirror. At 95%, you can read text in the reflection. At 60%, you just see a bright blur.
That 35% gap, is that something you can actually perceive in normal lighting? Or is that a lab measurement that only matters on paper?
Oh, it's immediately obvious. Hold a printed page up to a 60% surface and you'll see a bright smear where the white paper should be. Hold it up to a 95% surface and you can read the words. The human eye is exquisitely sensitive to specular reflection. We evolved to spot water surfaces after all. A 10% difference in reflectivity is noticeable. 35% is night and day.
The silver pen. What's happening there that prevents the mirror effect?
Standard silver markers use non-leafing aluminum flakes that are much thicker, 200 to 500 nanometers, and they're not treated with that release agent. They stay suspended throughout the binder rather than floating to the surface. So when the ink dries, you've got pigment particles randomly oriented at every angle, embedded at different depths in the binder resin. Light hits that and scatters. It's metallic, it's silver, but it's a matte-to-satin finish. It will never produce a reflection you can read text in. You can think of it as the difference between a calm lake and a choppy one. Same water, completely different reflective behavior.
The solvent is doing more than just keeping the ink wet. It's orchestrating the whole alignment process.
This is where the formulation gets genuinely elegant. Molotow's liquid chrome uses a multi-solvent blend. Acetone with a boiling point of 56 degrees Celsius, ethyl acetate at 77 degrees, and toluene at 111 degrees. The staggered evaporation rates mean the film doesn't flash off all at once. The acetone goes first, starting the contraction. Then the ethyl acetate takes over, giving the platelets time to migrate to the surface and orient. The toluene evaporates last, locking everything in place.
You're getting a choreographed drying sequence. The fast solvents pull the platelets up, the slower ones give them time to get comfortable, and then everything sets.
The surface tension is tuned so that the wet film self-levels. Any microscopic irregularities in the liquid surface get smoothed out before the film solidifies. That's critical. A mirror finish can't tolerate even tiny waves or pits in the surface. A defect of even a few hundred nanometers would scatter light and kill the reflectivity.
I'm trying to picture that. A defect of a few hundred nanometers. That's smaller than the wavelength of visible light, isn't it?
It's right at that boundary. Visible light ranges from about 400 to 700 nanometers, so a surface irregularity of, say, 300 nanometers is approaching half a wavelength. At that scale, you start getting destructive interference. The light waves bounce off the irregularity out of phase with the waves bouncing off the flat surface around it, and they partially cancel each other out. The result isn't a visible scratch, it's just a subtle loss of brilliance. The mirror looks slightly dull, and you can't quite figure out why.
The mirror effect is basically three things happening in sequence. The platelets float up, they all lie flat, and the surface smooths itself out before it freezes.
There's one more factor. The pigment loading in liquid chrome ink is 30 to 40% pigment by volume. Standard metallic markers run 10 to 15%, so you've got 2 to 3 times as many reflective platelets per square millimeter. There's simply more mirror to go around.
Which means when those platelets all align, there aren't gaps. A regular silver pen, even if some flakes happen to orient flat, there aren't enough of them to form a continuous layer.
You'd get tiny reflective islands in a sea of binder. The eye would perceive that as metallic sheen, not a mirror. The high pigment load means the platelets can tile across the entire surface, edge to edge. It's the same principle as mosaic tile. If you only have enough tiles to cover 60% of the floor, you see grout lines everywhere. If you have enough to cover 95%, the grout disappears.
Let's talk about what happens after you've laid down this perfect mirror. How long does it actually last?
This is where people get surprised, and often disappointed if they don't know what they're dealing with. The mirror layer is only about 1 to 2 microns thick. That's incredibly thin. A fingernail scratch will permanently mar it. It's not like automotive chrome, which is actual electroplated metal. Layers of copper, nickel, and chromium that can be 20 to 30 microns thick and hard enough to resist a key scratch. This is a paint film. A very clever paint film, but a paint film.
It's a mirror, but a fragile one. What's the actual failure look like in practice?
It has specific strengths and specific failure modes. Abrasion resistance is moderate at best. You can't handle it repeatedly without leaving marks. The oils from your fingers alone will leave visible smudges that are hard to clean without damaging the surface. But it resists oil surprisingly well in the sense that the oil doesn't chemically attack the binder. It just sits on top and looks terrible. It holds up to mild solvents. Isopropyl alcohol wipes will cause noticeable dulling after about 10 passes, but a single wipe won't destroy it. The real enemy is UV exposure. Uncoated liquid chrome will yellow and lose reflectivity within 6 to 12 months of direct sunlight. The aluminum itself doesn't yellow, aluminum is stable, but the binder resin degrades and discolors. And once the binder yellows, it's like putting an amber filter over your mirror. The reflectivity drops because the light has to pass through that degraded layer twice, once on the way in, once on the way out.
Which is where clear coating comes in.
This is critical. You cannot clear coat liquid chrome immediately. If you spray a clear coat over uncured chrome, the solvent in the clear coat will dissolve the chrome layer. The platelets will disorient. The mirror will turn into a muddy silver smear. You have to wait a full 24 hours at 20 degrees Celsius for the chrome layer to fully cure. After that, a UV-resistant clear coat, Molotow makes a dedicated 490 clear coat, or you can use an automotive 2K clear bowl, will extend the life from 6 months to 3 to 5 years under direct sunlight.
The 2K automotive clear is the more durable option?
Two-component urethane clears are what actual cars use. They're chemically cross-linked, so they form a hard, solvent-resistant shell. But they're also toxic, require proper ventilation, and you're dealing with a pot life once you mix the two parts, typically 20 to 40 minutes before the mixture hardens in the cup. For most DIY projects, the Molotow clear is sufficient and much easier to work with. It's a one-part formulation, so you just spray and walk away.
What about heat? If someone's marking a PC case or a laptop lid, those can get warm.
Liquid chrome handles up to about 80 degrees Celsius continuous, 120 degrees intermittent. That's fine for PC cases and laptops. A laptop lid under load might hit 45 degrees. A PC case interior may be 50. But it's not for engine bays or stovetops or anything that gets hot. Above 120 degrees, the binder starts to soften and the aligned platelets lose their orientation. They don't melt, aluminum melts at 660 degrees, but they shift. The mirror effect clouds over, and it doesn't come back when it cools.
We've got a mirror finish that's chemically fascinating, but physically delicate. Now the question is how to actually use it for something that looks professionally designed, not just a mirror blob.
This is where stencil technique becomes everything. The marker itself is capable of extraordinary results, but the stencil is what determines whether the final product looks like a factory finish or a craft project. You can have the most perfect mirror ink in the world, and if your stencil edge is ragged, the whole thing looks amateur.
Daniel specifically asked about computers and electronics, surfaces where you want precision.
The first thing to understand is that stencil thickness is the make or break variable. You want stencil material that's 0.1 to 0.2 millimeters thick. Anything thicker and you get ink bleeding under the edge. The stencil sits slightly proud of the surface, and the liquid chrome ink, because it's so thin and mobile before it sets, will wick into that gap.
Like water under a door.
And on a mirror finish, edge bleed is instantly visible. It reads as a fuzzy halo around what should be a crisp line. And because the mirror catches light so aggressively, that halo glints. Your eye goes straight to it. So the stencil material matters enormously. Oracle A113 adhesive vinyl is a good choice. Cricut Premium Vinyl works. These are thin, they have a low-tack adhesive that won't leave residue, and they can be cut with a craft cutter to whatever design you want.
I'm guessing the application process matters as much as the material.
Surface preparation is step one, and it's non-negotiable. You degrease the surface with isopropyl alcohol, 99% if you can get it. Any fingerprint oil will disrupt adhesion. Then you lightly scuff with 1000 grit sandpaper. Not to make it rough, just to give the surface some tooth. The scratches from 1000 grit are invisible to the naked eye, but they give the base coat something to grip. Then, and this is a step a lot of people skip, you apply a black base coat. Because liquid chrome is not perfectly opaque, a tiny amount of light can transmit through the film. If your substrate is, say, raw aluminum or beige plastic, that transmitted light reflects off the substrate and back through the chrome layer, slightly muting the mirror effect. A black base coat absorbs that transmitted light. The result is a deeper, more convincing mirror.
It's like the black backing on an actual glass mirror.
That's exactly what it is. A household mirror is glass with a thin metal coating on the back, and the back is painted black to prevent light leakage. Once the black base is dry, you apply your stencil. And here's where the technique gets specific. You don't just stick it on and hope for the best. You use a burnishing tool, basically a small plastic squeegee, to press every edge of the stencil down firmly. Any lifted edge is an invitation for ink bleed. I've seen people ruin hours of work because they got impatient and skipped the burnishing step.
For multi-layer designs with registration.
If you're doing something with multiple colors or layers, say a geometric pattern where some elements are chrome and others are matte black, you need registration marks. These are small shapes cut into the stencil at the corners that let you align each subsequent layer precisely. A light table helps enormously, or you can use transparent registration film. The chrome layer must be fully cured, again, 24 hours, before you apply the next stencil layer on top. If you rush it, the adhesive on the second stencil will lift the uncured chrome right off. And then you're starting over from the black base coat.
The workflow for a PC side panel with a geometric chrome design is sand, degrease, black base coat, first stencil, chrome application, cure 24 hours, second stencil if needed, then clear coat after another 24 hours.
Test on scrap material first. I cannot emphasize that enough. Liquid chrome behaves differently on different surfaces. IBS plastic, powder-coated steel, anodized aluminum, they all interact slightly differently with the solvents. A test piece costs you a few square inches of material and an hour of time. Ruining a laptop lid costs you a lot more. I've seen people skip the test piece because they were eager to get to the final result, and they ended up with a permanently damaged device.
What about the markers themselves? Molotow seems to be the name that keeps coming up.
Molotow's liquid chrome line is the category definer. They launched it in 2018, and the technology was actually licensed from a German automotive paint manufacturer called Spies-Hecker. These were people who knew how to make mirror finish spray paints for car detailing, and Molotow adapted the formulation for a marker format. The challenge wasn't inventing the chemistry. It was miniaturizing the delivery system so that the same multi-solvent blend could be dispensed through a pen tip instead of a spray nozzle.
It's automotive paint technology shrunk down into a pen. That explains why it behaves so differently from art store metallic markers.
With different tip sizes for different applications. They do a 1mm tip for fine detail, a 2mm for general work, a 4mm for filling larger areas, and pump markers up to 15mm wide. A single 2mm tip marker covers about 2 to 3 square feet before it runs dry. That's enough for a laptop lid and a phone case with some left over. The 1mm tip is great for thin lines and small details, but it's harder to get a perfectly smooth mirror because the ink film is narrower and dries faster.
There are competitors now.
Posca has the PC5M Chrome Montana makes a liquid chrome line. The formulations are similar, they're all using leafing aluminum pigment technology. The differences come down to solvent blend, tip quality, and pigment load. Molotow still tends to have the highest reflectivity in independent testing, but the gap has narrowed considerably in the last few years. Montana's version, for example, has a slightly different solvent blend that gives you about 30 seconds more working time, which can be helpful on larger surfaces, but the reflectivity is maybe 2 or 3% lower.
If someone walks into a stationery store and sees liquid chrome on a marker, they're getting this leafing pigment technology regardless of brand.
But I'd still check. Some cheaper markers labeled chrome are just bright silver with extra metallic flake. They'll say chrome effect rather than liquid chrome, and the tip-off is that they don't specify reflectivity. A real liquid chrome marker will be proud of what it does. Molotow literally puts mirror on the packaging. If the package is making vague claims about brilliant metallic shine, it's probably not the real thing.
Let me ask you about an edge case. Computers of rounded corners, phones of curved edges. Does the alignment mechanism still work when the surface isn't flat?
It does, within limits. The self-leveling and platelet alignment happen at the micron scale. A gentle curve, like the radius on a laptop corner, is effectively flat at that scale. The platelets don't know they're on a curve. But sharp compound curves, like the edge of a phone that curves in two directions simultaneously, can cause problems. The wet film doesn't self-level as evenly, and you can get variations in film thickness that show up as distortions in the reflection. It's like a funhouse mirror. The reflection is still there, but it's warped.
A flat PC side panel is the ideal canvas.
It's the sweet spot, and PC modding is actually one of the main use cases that's driven interest in these markers. The custom PC building community has embraced liquid chrome for creating mirror finish accents on cases, GPU backplates, and fan shrouds. It's a way to get a look that previously required sending parts out for vacuum metallization, which costs hundreds of dollars and takes weeks.
What's the cost comparison there?
A vacuum metallized finish on a PC side panel might cost $200 or more from a professional shop. A Molotow liquid chrome marker costs around $15 plus maybe $10 for clear coat and stencil material. So you're looking at roughly $25 versus $200, and you get about 80% of the visual quality.
You can do it this afternoon instead of waiting 3 weeks.
That's the democratization angle that makes this interesting beyond just the chemistry. Industrial mirror finishing used to require vacuum chambers, vapor deposition equipment, clean rooms. Now it requires a $15 pen and some patience. There's something almost subversive about that. A technology that was locked inside factories is now available at the stationery store.
Which brings us to the practical side. If someone's listening and wants to try this on their own computer or phone case, what's the checklist?
Step 1. Buy a real liquid chrome marker. Molotow liquid chrome, 2mm tip, is the safest starting point. Step 2. Surface prep. Isopropyl alcohol, light scuff with 1000 grit, black base coat. Step 3. Design your stencil. Cut it from thin adhesive vinyl, Oracle 813 or equivalent. Step 4. Apply the stencil with a burnishing tool, every edge pressed down. Step 5. Apply the liquid chrome in a single smooth pass. Do not go back and forth, that disrupts the platelet alignment. One pass, let it self-level. Step 6. Wait 24 hours. Step 7. Clear coat, also in a single smooth pass. Step 8. Wait another 24 hours before handling.
The single pass thing is interesting. You can't touch it up?
You can, but it's risky. If the first layer isn't fully cured, a second pass will dissolve it. If it is fully cured, the second pass will sit on top as a separate layer and may not blend seamlessly. The platelet alignment in the second layer won't necessarily match the first. It's better to get it right in one go. Think of it like pouring a layer of molten glass. You get one shot at a smooth surface. If you pour a second layer on top, you'll see the boundary. These solvents are no joke. Acetone, ethyl acetate, toluene, you want good airflow. Not necessarily a respirator for a small project, but definitely an open window and a fan. If you're doing a large piece, a proper organic vapor respirator is wise. Toluene in particular is not something you want to be breathing in concentration. It's a neurotoxin at high exposure levels. The amounts in a single marker aren't going to cause acute harm in a ventilated space, but chronic exposure is a different story.
The chemistry that makes the mirror possible is also the thing that makes you want to do it near an open window.
The solvent blend is a trade-off. Fast evaporation gives you the mirror effect, but fast evaporation also means more solvent in the air. You can't have one without the other. It's the fundamental tension in the formulation. Every improvement in reflectivity has come from tweaking that solvent blend, and every tweak carries health and safety implications.
What about flexible surfaces? A phone case flexes slightly when you take it on and off.
Liquid chrome on a flexible substrate will eventually crack. The mirror film is brittle. Those aligned aluminum platelets don't stretch. On a rigid phone case, it'll hold up fine. On a flexible TPU case, you'll get microcracking within weeks. The cracks start as hairline fractures that catch the light, and over time they propagate into a visible network. If you need a mirror finish on something that flexes, you're better off with a different approach entirely. Maybe a metallic vinyl wrap.
Which is a completely different technology.
Different mechanism, different look, different limitations. Vinyl wraps use actual metal foil laminated to an adhesive backing. They're more flexible but harder to apply precisely, and you can't get the same level of detail that a marker and stencil can achieve. A vinyl wrap can do a large, flat surface beautifully, but it struggles with intricate cutouts and fine lines. The marker excels at exactly those things.
Let's talk about the stencil design side for a moment. If someone wants to do something that looks professional, not just a single chrome logo, but a multi-element design, what's the workflow?
You're designing in layers, thinking about registration from the start. Let's say you want a geometric pattern on a PC side panel. Black background, chrome hexagons, maybe some matte white accent lines. You'd design all three layers in vector software, Illustrator or Inkscape or whatever, with registration marks at all four corners. Cut the black base stencil first, apply and paint. Then the chrome stencil, aligned to the registration marks, apply and paint. Then the white accent stencil, then the clear coat over everything.
Each layer has to be perfectly aligned.
The registration marks make it possible. Without them, you're eyeballing it, and on a mirror finish, a misalignment of even half a millimeter is visible. The reflection catches edges. Your eye is drawn to any irregularity. It's like hanging a picture frame slightly crooked. Nobody notices on a matte wall, but if the frame is mirrored, everyone sees it.
The mirror effect is actually less forgiving than a matte finish. It shows everything.
That's the paradox of liquid chrome. It produces the most striking finish available in a pen, and it also produces the most unforgiving finish. Every imperfection in your surface prep, every speck of dust, every wobble in your stencil cut, the mirror amplifies it. A matte black surface hides a multitude of sins. Liquid chrome puts them under a spotlight. I've seen people do beautiful work and then notice, in the final inspection, a single dust particle embedded in the chrome that they hadn't seen during application. And once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Which is why the people who get the best results are the ones who are almost obsessively methodical about preparation.
The marker is the easy part. The prep is the craft. I know a model builder who does liquid chrome work on custom car models, and he spends 90% of his project time on surface prep and stencil work. The actual chrome application takes about 30 seconds, but those 30 seconds only work because of the hours of preparation that came before.
Let's zoom out for a moment. This technology has been around since 2018. Where's it heading?
The biggest limitation right now is the solvent base. Those volatile organic compounds are effective but problematic. Health concerns, environmental concerns, shipping restrictions. The industry is moving toward water-based formulations. Molotow has hinted at development work in that direction, and I'd expect to see a water-based liquid chrome within 2 to 3 years.
The challenge there is that water evaporates much more slowly,
which disrupts the entire leafing mechanism. The platelets need that rapid evaporation to float to the surface and align before the film sets. If the drying time is too long, gravity starts to matter, the platelets can settle or disorient. Water-based formulations need a completely different approach to get the same result, possibly using forced hot air drying or UV cure mechanisms. UV cure is particularly interesting because you could apply the ink, let the platelets self-align for a few seconds, and then hit it with UV light to instantly freeze the structure in place. No waiting, no solvent evaporation curve to manage.
It's not just swapping out the solvent, it's rethinking the whole system.
It's a fundamental reformulation challenge. But if someone cracks it, the market expands enormously. Water-based means safer for schools, safer for home use without ventilation concerns, easier to ship internationally. It would take liquid chrome from a niche art supply to a mainstream product. You could see these markers in every craft store, every classroom, every DIY enthusiast's toolkit.
In the meantime, the solvent-based stuff keeps getting better.
The reflectivity numbers have improved every year. The first Molotow liquid chrome in 2018 was impressive, but had consistency issues. Some batches were noticeably less reflective than others. By 2020, they dialed in the pigment milling process to get tighter platelet thickness distribution. More uniform platelets mean more uniform alignment, mean higher reflectivity.
There's a whole quality control dimension to this that most people never think about. The difference between a good batch and a great batch is how consistently thin the aluminum platelets are.
That's a manufacturing challenge at the nanoscale. You're trying to produce millions of aluminum flakes, each 50 to 100 nanometers thick, with minimal variation. The milling process has to be extraordinarily precise. If 10% of your platelets are 150 nanometers thick instead of 80, those thicker flakes won't leaf properly. They're too heavy to float to the surface quickly. They'll end up embedded in the binder, scattering light, reducing overall reflectivity.
The mirror effect is only as good as the worst platelets in the batch.
The reflectivity is a statistical property of the platelet population. Every flake that doesn't align is a tiny dark spot in the mirror. Get enough of them and the eye stops perceiving a mirror and starts perceiving a shiny surface. It's a threshold effect. You need something like 85 to 90% of the platelets to align properly before the brain says mirror instead of shiny metal.
What about the tip design? Does that matter for the mirror effect?
It matters enormously for application quality, but not for the chemistry itself. The mirror comes from the ink formulation, but a poor tip can ruin the result by applying the ink unevenly. Molotow uses a capillary system with a valve mechanism. The tip is spring-loaded, and pressing down releases a controlled flow of ink. This matters because liquid chrome needs to go down in a consistent wet film thickness. Too thin, and you don't get enough platelet coverage. Too thick, and the drying time extends, giving platelets more time to disorient.
The marker is engineered to deliver a specific flow rate.
The flow rate is matched to the evaporation rate of the solvent blend. That's not an accident. The engineers who designed these markers calculated how much ink needs to be on the surface at any given moment for the leafing mechanism to work optimally. Too little ink and it dries before the platelets can align. Too much and it stays wet too long and the platelets can settle or be disturbed by air currents or vibration. It's a Goldilocks zone and the marker's valve system is tuned to keep you in it.
This is starting to sound less like a marker and more like a precision instrument.
It is a precision instrument. It's just one that happens to cost $15 and look like a paint pen. The amount of chemical and mechanical engineering packed into it is impressive. You've got nanoscale pigment engineering, multi-solvent evaporation kinetics, capillary fluid dynamics, and valve mechanics, all working together so you can draw a shiny line on a laptop.
The fact that it works at all outside of a controlled lab environment is kind of remarkable.
Think about what's happening. You're applying a liquid film to a surface in a normal room. Not a clean room, not a vacuum chamber, not a temperature-controlled environment. There's dust in the air, there are slight temperature variations, the surface might have microscopic irregularities. And yet, within seconds, that liquid film is organizing itself into a near-perfect mirror. The self-leveling and self-aligning properties are doing an enormous amount of work to compensate for imperfect conditions. It's a little miracle of chemical engineering that we've gotten so used to that we don't stop to appreciate it.
It's the Roomba of paint finishes. It cleans up after itself.
That's not a bad analogy. The formulation is designed to be forgiving of application conditions while producing a result that looks unforgiving. It's a clever bit of chemical engineering. The Roomba doesn't need you to pre-clean the floor. It handles the dirt it finds. Liquid chrome doesn't need a perfectly prepared surface. It handles the microscopic irregularities it encounters. Within limits, of course.
Let's circle back to something practical. You mentioned the black base coat earlier. How critical is that, really? If someone skips it, what do they actually get?
On a dark substrate, black plastic, dark anodized aluminum, you might not notice the difference. On anything lighter, the mirror will look slightly washed out. It's hard to describe without seeing it side by side, but the reflection has less depth. It's the difference between a mirror and a very shiny piece of metal. The black base absorbs the light that gets through, so the only light returning to your eye is what reflected off the front surface, which is what a mirror is supposed to do.
It's not that the chrome fails without the black base. It's that it's only reaching maybe 85% of its potential.
In some applications, 85% is fine. If you're doing a decorative accent on something that won't be examined closely, you can skip it. If you're doing a laptop lid that you want to look like a factory mirror finish, do the black base. The extra step takes maybe 15 minutes and costs a few dollars in paint. It's one of the highest return investments you can make in the final result.
What about white base coats? I've seen people do white under metallic paints for brightness.
White under liquid chrome creates a slightly different effect. It's brighter, but less mirror-like. The white reflects transmitted light back through the chrome layer, which increases overall brightness but reduces contrast in the reflection. The mirror looks hotter, more like polished aluminum than a glass mirror. It's an aesthetic choice, but for maximum mirror realism, black is the way to go. Some people actually prefer the white base look for certain applications. It has a more futuristic, high-tech feel to it. But if you want people to ask, is that an actual mirror?
The black base isn't just tradition. It's physics.
It's physics, and it's the same physics that's been used in mirror making for centuries. The silvering on the back of a glass mirror has always been backed with dark paint. The technology changes, but the principles don't. A Venetian mirror from the 16th century and a Molotow liquid chrome marker are using the same optical principle, a reflective layer backed by a light-absorbing layer. The Venetian glassmaker would recognize the physics immediately, even if the chemistry would seem like magic.
Let's talk about failure modes for a minute. What are the most common ways people mess this up?
Number one is touching the chrome before it's cured. 24 hours feels like forever when you're excited about a project. People check if it's dry after 2 hours, leave a fingerprint, and that fingerprint is permanently embedded in the mirror. Number two is rushing the clear coat. The solvent in the clear coat attacks the uncured chrome, and instead of a mirror, you get a cloudy silver smear. Number three is poor stencil adhesion. The stencil lifts slightly at an edge, ink bleeds under, and you've got a fuzzy line that catches the light.
All three of those come down to impatience.
Liquid chrome is a patience tax. The materials do the work, but only if you give them the time they need. Every shortcut costs you in the final result. I've seen people try to speed up curing with a hairdryer. Don't do that. The uneven heating creates convection currents in the wet film that disrupt the platelet alignment. You end up with swirl marks. Let it cure at room temperature, in still air, for the full 24 hours.
Which is probably why the people who get the best results tend to be model makers and miniature painters. people who are already trained in the art of waiting for things to dry.
That community has adopted liquid chrome enthusiastically. Model car builders use it for bumpers and trim. Gunpla builders use it for metallic accents on mecha. These are people who already understand that a good finish is about process discipline, not just materials. They're used to waiting 12 hours for a wash to dry, or 24 hours for a clear coat to cure. Liquid chrome slots right into that workflow.
Someone coming from PC building, where everything is about screwing things together and booting up, might need to adjust their expectations.
PC building has its own patience requirements. Cable management alone can take hours. But paint finishing is a different kind of patience. It's not active work, it's waiting. And that's harder for some people than doing the work. With cable management, you're actively routing and tying and adjusting. You can see progress. With paint curing, you're just not touching it for 24 hours. That's a different mental muscle.
What about the marker storage? Do these things dry out if you don't use them regularly?
They're solvent-based, so the seal on the cap is critical. If the cap doesn't seal properly, the solvents slowly evaporate and the ink thickens. A thickened ink won't flow properly and won't self-level. Store them horizontally, cap firmly seated, and they'll last for years. Store them vertically with a loose cap, and you might get 6 months. I've seen markers that were stored properly for 3 years and still performed like new. I've also seen markers that were left uncapped overnight and were completely dead by morning.
That's the kind of detail that sounds trivial until you ruin a $15 marker.
It's not just liquid chrome. That's true of most paint markers. The capillary system needs the ink to be in contact with the tip. Vertical storage with the tip up means the ink drains away from the tip, and you'll have to pump it to resaturate, which wastes ink and can introduce air bubbles. Air bubbles in the tip cause skipping during application, which means an uneven film, which means a patchy mirror. All from storing the marker the wrong way up.
All right, let's pull all of this together. If someone's listening and they want to try this, maybe a geometric design on a PC side panel, something that'll look professional, what's the complete shopping list?
Molotow Liquid Chrome Marker, 2mm tip. Molotow Premium Black for the base coat. Oracle 8113 adhesive vinyl for the stencil. A burnishing tool, they cost a few dollars. 1000 grit sandpaper. 99% isopropyl alcohol. A craft knife or a cutting machine like a Cricut if you have one. Molotow 490, clear coat or an automotive 2K clear. Painter's tape for masking off areas you don't want to paint. And a well-ventilated workspace. Around $40 to $50 if you're starting from scratch. Less if you already have some of the supplies. That's for a setup that'll do multiple projects. The marker itself will cover 2 to 3 square feet, which is several laptop lids or phone cases.
The time investment?
For a single layer chrome design on a PC side panel, you're looking at maybe 2 hours of active work spread across 3 days. An hour for prep and base coat on day 1, 30 minutes for chrome application on day 2, 30 minutes for clear coat on day 3. The rest is curing time.
It's a weekend project that spans the whole weekend.
Start Friday evening, finish Sunday evening. By Monday morning, you've got a mirror finish, PC panel that looks like it cost $200.
The satisfaction of having done it yourself.
Which is really what the whole DIY customization scene is about. Anyone can buy a pre-modded case. Making it yourself? Understanding the chemistry, mastering the technique? That's a different kind of value. You're not just buying a look. You're learning how the look works.
Let's look forward a bit. Where do you see this technology in 5 years?
I think we'll see water-based formulations that are safer and easier to use, possibly with slightly lower reflectivity but much broader adoption. I think we'll see more colors. Right now, liquid chrome is basically silver, but there's research into leafing pigments with tinted aluminum that could produce gold chrome, copper chrome, even blue chrome. And I think we'll see integration with home fabrication. People 3D printing parts and then chrome finishing them at home.
The home fabrication angle is interesting. A 3D printed part with a mirror finish would look completely different from raw PLA.
That's already happening in the cosplay and prop making communities. You print a helmet or a weapon prop, sand it smooth, hit it with filler primer, sand again, black base, liquid chrome. The result looks like machined metal. It's indistinguishable from the real thing at arm's length. I've seen prop weapons that look like solid steel, and they weigh almost nothing because they're hollow plastic with a micron-thick mirror coating.
We're moving toward a world where metal finish stops being a material property and becomes a surface treatment you can apply to anything.
That's the democratization I mentioned earlier. The boundary between plastic and metal as visual categories is dissolving. What used to require industrial processes is now available in a pen. And that has implications beyond hobbyist projects. Think about prototyping, product design, architectural models. You can mock up a chrome-finished product without sending anything to a factory.
Which probably makes traditional metal finishers nervous.
For high-wear applications, metal is still metal. A chrome-plated bumper and a painted plastic bumper are not the same thing. The plated bumper will survive gravel impacts and car washes for decades. The painted one won't. But for decorative applications, things that are looked at more than they're touched, liquid chrome is closing the gap fast, and the gap keeps narrowing as the formulations improve.
Before we wrap up, let's give people the condensed version. If you remember nothing else from this conversation, what are the three things you should know?
1. Liquid chrome works because of leafing aluminum pigments, ultra-thin platelets that float to the surface and align into a continuous mirror. Regular silver markers use non-leafing flakes that scatter light. They are fundamentally different technologies, not different shades of the same thing. 2. The mirror is fragile. It's 1 to 2 microns thick, scratches easily, and needs a clear coat for durability. But apply that clear coat correctly. After a full 24-hour cure, and your finish will last for years. 3. Stencil technique makes or breaks the result. Use thin adhesive vinyl, burnish every edge, apply the chrome in a single smooth pass, and cure fully between layers. The marker does the chemistry. You do the patience.
Phone case, laptop accent, something manageable. Master the technique before you tackle a full PC side panel.
The skills transfer. Once you've done a small piece successfully, you'll know exactly how the ink behaves, how long it takes to cure in your environment, how the clear coat interacts with it. Scaling up from there is just a matter of more stencil material and more time. The chemistry doesn't change, only the square footage does.
The path from zero to mirror finished PC case is small test piece, small project, then the real thing.
At each stage, the chemistry is doing the heavy lifting. You're not painting a mirror. You're creating the conditions for the ink to assemble itself into one. That's the thing I find beautiful about this technology. The marker doesn't contain a mirror. It contains the instructions for making a mirror, written in solvent blends and platelet geometries. You provide the surface and the patience. The ink does the rest. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, a prospector in Tasmania's Zeehan district discovered a deposit of crocite so rich in chromium that individual crystals glowed orange-red under ultraviolet light, a natural fluorescence that later mineralogists traced to trace manganese ions within the lead chromate lattice. Only a single surviving specimen from that pocket is confirmed to still exhibit the effect after a century.
A single specimen? One rock on the entire planet that does that exact thing. It's like the liquid chrome of the mineral world, a freak occurrence of chemistry that produces something visually astonishing.
Like liquid chrome, it's all about trace elements and lattice structures. A few manganese ions in the right places, and a mineral that would otherwise just be orange becomes fluorescent. The parallels between geological chemistry and engineered chemistry are everywhere once you start looking.
This has been my Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this deep dive into the chemistry of mirror finishes, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps other curious minds find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Go make something reflective.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.